Good Saturday morning. We continue with the Experts program here on Power Talk Radio, 1460 and 101 FM. Right now, it's time for us to talk with our retirement expert. That's Nan Lesnick of Lesnick Company. Good morning, Nan.
Good morning, Mark.
The other day, we started on an interesting conversation. It has to do with some of the emotional pitfalls that investors can fall into. We talked about the worrier. That's the person who, you know, won't invest in the stock market because they're worried it's going to crash and never come back up. Maybe they have not direct memories, but they've heard family members recount what happened in 1929, the beginning of the Great Depression, you know, and they're like, oh my God, I'll never put any money. You know, that's what happens when you put money in the stock market. It'll all go away and I'll end up jumping out a window or something like that. Yeah. So that's the worrier. Now, there are five other emotional types. Let's get to those this morning. Let's go to the stalwart. Who is the stalwart or what is the stalwart?
Well, the stalwart is a person who does not want to make any changes to their portfolio. But we might not only be talking about their portfolio. We're also talking about them making any adjustments in their total financial world. So they can't make a decision because they don't like change. They won't make a decision because they don't like change.
Right.
Now, most people actually welcome change, but they don't like the process of change because they don't like that period of time of being uncomfortable. So the stalwart, by not being able to make a decision to make changes, may be avoiding making a budget. They may be avoiding changing their spending or saving habits. And let me tell you, that's a big one right there, that people don't want to be told they have to change their spending habits. And sometimes it's not even negative. It's just you've got to get a better look at this and you need to understand where you're going. Because when you're going into retirement, you know, you're probably not going to pick up a part-time job to pay for whatever that extra is that you decided to keep in your budget. And Mark, I have a 71-year-old man told me the other day, as he's leaving his business, he's not concerned about some expenses that we discussed because he plans to work part-time when he gets settled in his new location. And it was like, oh my gosh, well, maybe so. And I hope so, because that'll probably keep you young and vibrant, but it might not work out.
Right.
So what people have to do is they have to employ a coach. Sometimes we call ourselves financial coaches to help them get a perspective as to what to reality and then act on that.
Now, the next one is the hesitator. Who is the hesitator?
Yep. The hesitator, what they've mentioned here, is a client who is reluctant to sell a security at a loss, even though there are better securities. Now, that is a paralyzing thing, really. People say, you know, I really don't want to sell this at a loss. I'm just going to hang on to it. And in reality, Mark, they probably are okay if they have a long period of time. Because if it's a reasonable stock, and I'm just picking one out of the air. I don't even know what the price of it is today. But let's just say we're talking about Ford.
Right.
Okay. If Ford's price is down now, it is more than likely, as a matter of fact, it's highly likely that the price is going to come back and it will once again be profitable to that investor. However, we don't know what the time frame is. And when we're talking about retirement, we are talking about a time frame. You are going to need to have your portfolio producing income at a certain point. So sometimes saying, I don't want to have that loss, is stopping you from your ultimate goal, which is to retire. So again, this really needs to have the input from somebody who can help you see the bigger picture. Because when you've got that kind of a situation, that's the only thing you can see when you look into your portfolio.
The next one on the list is the preservationist.
Yeah. And those are people who inherited stock and they don't want to sell it. The most common thing is, I got this stock from my grandparents and my grandfather worked for this company all of his career. Well, that's great. But what is it doing for your portfolio? I generally, when I run into that, when people have an emotional attachment to some security, I do allow them to keep part of it. Okay. I do allow them to hang on to that because it's almost, you know, it's a memoir. Okay. Mm-hmm. And as long as it's not hurting them, that's okay. But I did have a client, she's no longer with us, but she went badly down the drain financially because she would not sell the stock that she had received from her parents.
Oh my.
Some of it was given to her on birthdays and so forth by her father when he worked for the company. The rest she inherited, and the company ended up nearly folding, and she honestly ended up without money because her comment was, it would be dishonoring my parents to do that.
Yeah. You know, the sad thing is that people that put themselves in that position don't really understand that if the person who had left them that security, if they were still around today at the top of their game, analyzing the market as they did during their day, they would say, oh no, we've got to get rid of this. It's not performing anymore. Right. The trend line on this particular security is going the wrong way, and we could lose our shirts on this.
Yep.
Right? And that's, I think, what you have to think about when you are holding one of these heirloom securities. Maybe that's the best term for it, an heirloom security, right?
Yeah.
And when you start getting emotional about it, like, oh, I just can't let go of that because old granddad passed that down to dad and dad passed that to me. But you have to ask yourself, well, how did it become a good security and what powers of analysis, you know, because I can guarantee you that when granddad and dad were looking at that security, they weren't looking at it emotionally. They were looking at it with cold, hard, steel-eyed kind of analysis of whether it was worth investing in or not. And so I think people sometimes have to remember that why you have it is, the reason you have it is because somebody did a very objective analysis at some point, and you have to do that same objective analysis. And the reality is that's the heirloom that you want to hold on to, is that gift of objective analysis.
Yeah.
That's what's really worth passing down the family line.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. You know, there's a particular stock that comes to my mind just because it has some local, shall we say, some local flavor from the Central Valley, and that is General Mills. I have met a number of people who have a long history of General Mills stock being in their family, and they have a great deal of difficulty in divesting themselves because this is what their father retired on. And in many cases, the dividend income plus the pension was enough for them to live. And they really have an attachment. As a matter of fact, I had a client, he's now deceased, but he went to college based on two things. The money he made working in the summertime at General Mills in the Central Valley and the dividends that his parents got on their stock. And this gentleman, obviously a much older person, but he went to Stanford on this.
Wow.
So, but shall we use that phrase? That was back in the day.
Yes.
Things are a bit different now, and people need to look at it in that way.
We have time for two more. We have to kind of push through these, the familiar and the mathematician. What about the familiar? What is that emotional state?
Well, the familiar are people who only want to be invested in something that they are familiar with. Now, it mentions U.S. securities and sectors and so forth here. I tend to be a U.S. investor because uncertainty around the world is not something that my clients want to be engaged in. But sometimes people only want to be invested in what they know. For instance, I had a client who worked for Hewlett-Packard at medical instruments. She only wanted to be invested in the medical sector. That's not a good idea. Diversification, you know, it's diversify, diversify, diversify. It's really very important that we have many streams of income, shall we say, and streams of investment. So the familiar is the person who, or they may say, I only want to invest in tech stocks because I live so close to Silicon Valley and I see how prosperous all that is. Well, that's short-sighted. That's very short-sighted.
But you know, it's interesting. I'm looking at a map that's on here and farther down in this story, and it shows investor allocation by region. And people do tend to invest in the areas that they're most familiar with, or perhaps they are investing in a particular sector because they realize that their investment in that, well, it's enlightened self-interest. It's good for themselves. Like, for example, you see that there is a plus 10% factor of investment in technology in the Western United States. Well, technology, yeah. You know, that's kind of what we made our bones on out here, right?
That's right.
And then
when
you look at industrials, car manufacturing, heavy industrial stuff, well, that's plus 11% in the upper Midwest. Well, maybe those folks are investing in themselves and their own futures.
Are.
And the energy sector is plus 14% from Texas on through Florida. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
and then,
exactly.
Yeah, and then the people who steal their money with a pen up in the Northeast, they're heavily invested in the financials up there.
Yep, yep. There's actually some logic to that, but it gets to be obsessive, and people have a feeling very often, oh my gosh, I had a client who had nearly $1 million in the stock of the company for which he worked. And that's so, I mean, goodness sakes, we were able to move him out of that, but he was not born in the United States, and he was very grateful for everything that he had achieved and felt as though he owed it to the company to have all of his retirement be invested in the company.
Okay, the final one here, as we wrap this up, is going to be the mathematician. That's an interesting
thing. Yeah, that is, what I'll call that more than anything else, is paralysis by analysis.
Right,
okay.
Right.
The mathematician usually has a large balance in their checking account, and they also have a significant amount of debt, and they have it all figured out why that debt is good for them. They do not tend to have the right mathematical components in place, shall we say. It's not, they're not really mathematical, but they often don't have an emergency fund to help them weather a job loss or an unexpected bill. But they do have money in their checking account that is not working for them, but they don't know why it's there. In other words, Mark, what we're talking about here, they're lacking a plan. And the plan needs to cover now. It needs to cover the short term, what I call the soon bucket, and it needs to cover the long term. And if you're in any one of these categories that we talked about, you probably don't have a comprehensive plan that will take you securely to the end of your life.
Some great advice this morning from Nan Lesnick. She's our expert when it comes to retirement issues. Give her a call at her office in Monterey at 831-656-0236, online, lesnickcompany.com. Her email, Nan@lesnickcompany.com. Nan, thanks very much. Have a great weekend, and we'll chat again on Thursday.
Thank you.